are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here on this Mailbag Monday edition of the show. Still all kinds of topics to get into here throughout the offseason as we go through OTAs and mini camps and ultimately head to a training camp for the 2019 season. So we're going to fire up that mailbag. Got a ton of Twitter questions to get into on today's program. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show. We are on the new Himalaya podcast app. It's free, super easy to use, has every single podcast you love or are searching for, and they have personally curated playlists made just for you by the expert podcast tastemakers at Himalaya. You can also find this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. That's the best place to get those mailbag questions in. You can also email the show, LockedOn49ers at Gmail. You can find us at LockedOn49ers.com. Before we open up this show to the listeners, I do want to congratulate Joe Staley on his new two-year contract that was announced at the 49ers State of the Franchise event late last week. It didn't make it onto the Thursday podcast, so I just wanted to shout out Joe Staley, and I know a lot of fans were stoked about that, to know Joe Staley's going to be around for two more years. He's been such a great player for this 49ers team. He's on the 10-year wall. And now it looks like the 49ers won't have to go looking too hard for an offensive tackle in the upcoming offseason. So that is one piece of business that is now taken care of that impacts the next couple of years. And Joe Staley even a little sentimental about it. And it sounds like he wants to stick around and be the 49er for life. And I think it's always really cool when a player can stick around, play at a high level, and play only for one franchise for a long time.
The moment you guys have drafted me in 2007 has been my absolute honor to play for this franchise, and I've wanted nothing more than to complete my entire career here with one franchise.
Joe Staley, career 49er, and Mike McGlinchey doesn't have to worry about flipping over to left tackle, at least on a permanent basis, for a couple of more years anyway. All right, let's get to the tweets. Let's start it off with Jeremy, who says, outside of Kittle, who do you think is going to make the biggest leap from the 2017 draft class? I mean, someone has to get better, right? Spoon, Colbert, or Solly T? I think those are all great candidates. I think you're going to see a lot from DJ Jones. He might be the sleeper to be on the field a lot, especially on running down situations, and be that big plugger of a nose tackle that really he's the only guy that fills that role now that Mitchell is gone and Eric Armstead is going to play a lot, or I think they hope or they want him to play a lot of that role. And Solomon Thomas is going to get in there and be playing next to Buckner on passing downs, and a lot of bodies to get in there and work in on the defensive line still. So it's going to be fun to see how that works out and who takes the job. I think that's going to be part of it, is who owns it. Maybe Solomon Thomas proves that he is that guy and he's going to own it. But yeah, I think the secondary there, Colbert or Witherspoon, is what the 49ers really need, even more so than Solomon Thomas, even though obviously Thomas was the number three overall pick. They really need consistency from either Colbert, especially if Jimmy Ward's going to be hurt, or Akella Witherspoon, and really solidify that defensive backfield. Stay healthy, stay on the field, play at a high level, and get those communications down and just provide some consistency. And they're going to get tested. They're going to get tested early. That's going to be one of the first indicators on how this 2019 season is going to go, I think. And I don't know if I'm going to watch any position group as closely as whoever's playing on the opposite side of Richard Sherman at cornerback week one and whoever's back there in the deep middle of the field. And I guess I can't make the joke that sometimes I just like to twist the knife a little bit with 49ers fans. And normally I would have made the joke about Reuben Foster being that guy, but obviously, he's torn that ACL, and so he's going to be out for the 2019 season. So it's definitely not going to be him. Let's stick with that defensive line conversation and go to Sean on Twitter, who says, how many sacks does the Niners D get this year? I think 50 is a very real possibility. And then Legbreaker jumps in here. Aggressive name, by the way, Legbreaker. He says, I expect at least 10 from Buckner, 10 from Ford, and 10 from Bosa. This defense is going to look really nasty in a 4-2-5 alignment. Yeah, and I think that 4-2-5 is what they're trying to gear that defense around. And absolutely, that is going to be a fun one to watch. 50 has a lot of sacks. Last year, the 49ers had 37 sacks. They gave up 48. They really need to flip-flop that number. 50 is doable, especially with these projections. Buckner 10, Ford 10, Bosa 10. That's 30 sacks right there. That would leave only 7 for the rest of the team compared to last year. But yeah, I think they're going to blow last year's sack number out of the water. At least they should. And if they don't, then you know maybe something went very wrong. But Solomon Thomas getting in from the inside, as Leg Breaker mentions here, lining up as 3 technique on passing downs. His gift is the inside rip. If they take contain off of his plate, he becomes a natural gap destroyer. It's where he was born to play. And yeah, just penetrating those gaps. That's Solomon Thomas's game. That's what he did in college. He basically just, you want to make that guard a swinging gate inside. And he did that so well. And that's what you're looking for. The burst. He can really just get the jump on any interior offensive lineman in the league with his burst. And he's got strength, and you don't want to ask him to bend the edge. I think on running downs, you can still have him out playing some defensive end as well, and he's good at that. So why take that completely off of his plate? Because he's still good at it. But yeah, on passing downs, you want him inside. You want him close to the quarterback and going upfield and shooting those gaps. 50 sacks, it's a good number. I might go under on that if you're setting the over-under there at 50, but they've got a potential to be a nasty group up front and really get after the quarterback. And I think they're gonna have to do that if they want this thing to go right and really help out the back end that a lot of people are still a little bit worried about, including myself. James wants to know, how many wide receivers will the 49ers be keeping and who will be left out? I've talked about this a lot. I think the 49ers need to, I mean, ideally they would find a way to keep 7 and have not a redshirt year, but a borderline, like almost don't count Jalen Hurd. You know, let him be sort of hang out in the OW limbo area as far as positional stuff goes. You know, that's why you're only keeping 2 quarterbacks. Maybe you could keep 2 tight ends active and have Jalen Hurd sort of be the third, and then have a guy in the practice squad. If someone gets hurt, you call another guy up. And that way you can keep 6 other wide receivers. That would be ideal. And if that's the case, then I think it would definitely be... The more I think about it, the more I think Richie James is closer to a lock than not. Because of his special teams value, he can play in the slot, he can play outside. And when you consider Trent Taylor, who's a slot only, and maybe Trent Taylor does some things better, but Richie James does some things better. And I want to see Richie James year 2 and take that jump. And if he does take a jump and he looks like a player that is about to take another, you know, sophomore jump, as wide receivers tend to, and we'll know that in camp. And I don't know if the 49ers can cut that guy. Because that special teams value, when you're down the depth chart a little bit at wide receiver, and Trent Taylor's not going to give you that as much. And can Richie James give you 90% of what Trent Taylor can in the slot? Or 100%, you know? They've got a lot of guys that can play the slot. So having a slot-only player in Trent Taylor, that hurts his ability to make the roster more than anything, because I think they really like him. And he thinks he's a good player. And maybe they're going to focus on the middle of the field in the passing game. It just seems that way. So maybe they want all these slot guys, and they're going to have everybody playing in the slot at once somehow. I guess not the slot if everybody's there. But you know what I'm saying. The locks are Jalen Hurd because he's a third-round pick, Deebo Samuel because he was a second-round pick this year, and Dante Pettis because he was a second-round pick last year. Those guys are going to make the squad. And someone might get hurt before camp and go on the pup list and make this thing a lot easier. The outside looking in, I still think, is Kendrick Bourne. He's a nice story, undrafted free agent. I like him. I know the 49ers like him, but you got to cut somebody. And again, not a lot of special teams value, and he's not going to start at Z. And you have a player like Jordan Matthews who could start in place of Deebo Samuel at Z. He could start in front of Deebo Samuel if Samuel's not ready as a rookie to get in there right away in week 1. But Jordan Matthews can also play in the slot, and he gives you that different-looking wide receiver, more size. Jimmy Garoppolo was already talking about it. It was the first thing Jimmy Garoppolo said in the first OTA practice. Like, oh, man, look at this guy. He's big and long and has these long arms and can catch balls outside his frame. And he was almost blown away because he hasn't had a lot of those guys to throw to like that on the 49ers that are shaped that way. So he's more unique. I would keep Jordan Matthews over Kendrick Bourne. Both guys are in the last years of their contract. They're both going to be free agents. So Trent Taylor at least has another year after this on his rookie deal. Kendrick Bourne, as an undrafted free agent, it's a three-year situation. So he would be a restricted free agent or just an outright free agent? I can't remember. But reaching free agency for Kendrick Bourne and your fifth, sixth guys got to be able to make some sort of an impact during a football game. And I don't know if Kendrick Bourne, if he's not starting and he's not playing much outside wide receiver, you know, he's sort of wasting an active jersey, I think, in that case. And so I think that's why he would be the one that makes sense for me to cut. So Marquise Goodwin's probably going to be the fourth. I don't envision him getting cut at all. Richie James is five. If you can keep seven, you can keep Jordan Matthews and Trent Taylor. If not, it's between one of those two guys for that last spot. And Kendrick Bourne, not an easy cut, but for me, I think it's just between those three guys, he would be the first one to cut, and then it'd be between Jordan Matthews and Trent Taylor for that last spot. Probably go to Taylor if it was only six wide receivers. But if it's up to me, I would probably keep Matthews over Taylor just because of his ability to be versatile, play slot, big slot, have the size, give you a lot of different things. He could start as an outside wide receiver too if they have injuries or if he even wins a job outright. Or at least pushes someone like Deebo Samuel to have to beat him out for that spot. Before we get to the next question, I'd like to take this opportunity to tell you guys about Blue Chew. Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra something, that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's like blue, the color blue, and chew like you chew it. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Hugo has a question here about wide receivers. I like this one. He says, build your perfect wide receiver from attributes and physical characteristics from the 49ers wide receiver group. Ooh, that's a good one. So some of them are super easy. So I would say, obviously, speed is Marquise Goodwin. Size, either or, Jordan Matthews, Jalen Hurd. I think Jalen Hurd's a little bit bigger. I think Jordan Matthews might have slightly longer hands, longer arms and bigger hands. But yeah, 6'4", 227. Jalen Hurd, I like that one. So Hurd size, Marquise Goodwin's speed. I would say Dante Pettis's route running ability, his quicks. I would put Deebo Samuel's run after catch in there. I think he's going to be awesome in that role. Hashtag slant god. Trent Taylor's toughness. I would say Pettis's hands. I think Pettis has the softest, you know, most natural hands on the team, which goes really well with his ability to move like he does, like a weirdo, and get open and snatch the ball out of the air. And then I'm not a swag guy. I think it's probably pretty obvious listening to this show, and if you knew me in person. But I know wide receivers love to have their swag, and somehow it helps them play better. And so that would be, I think that would be Kendrick Bourne. So that's what I would build a wide receiver from, physical characteristics based off the 49ers' current roster. Some of those kind of easy choices. Drew has a question about the cap and the carryover. Since cap room is carried over to the next year, are the bloated contracts to Ward and Armstead for 1 year going to make signing Buckner more difficult? I mean, it would be nice to have, you know, Armstead's $9 million rolled over into next year, but at the same time, you're not paying him. That $9 million comes off the books this year, so you're not paying it at all next year. So it's no difference. The $9 million is going to be gone next year in one way or the other, but it would be nice to have more money rolled over, but it's really not going to make any impact at all on Buckner. Buckner's a long-term deal. That's just a one-year thing. And the Buckner negotiation is it's its own beast, and he's going to be asking for a lot. The 49ers are going to have to pay him a lot. It's going to be a tough one, but I think a deal they can get done. And as a 49er fan, you got to like the quote that he had over the weekend about wanting to be a 49er for life and wanting to be on that 10-year wall like a Joe Staley. And I think that's a good sign for the 49ers signing Buckner long-term. I think Ward's contract is, what, $3 million for 1 year? So not a huge impact there. So short answer, no. And if you're going to keep Armstead around next year, I mean, you got to re-sign him and get that restructured, right? Because then you would have a little bit more rollover going into next year, because that $9 million number is pretty large. And I think any team, if let's say the 49ers decided to dangle Armstead and trade him, a team, not many teams can take on $9 million in cap. So that team would probably have to restructure or sign him to a new deal too. But yeah, no, it's not going to impact Buckner at all, in my opinion. How about Samson's question, a curse? Thoughts on whether there is a curse on our team since leaving Candlestick, and if not, the reasoning behind why you don't think so. Wow, okay, so Samson's so sure of it, he just wants to know why I wouldn't think so if I don't. And no, I don't think there's a curse. I mean, I don't believe in that. But I understand why you would think there might be a curse because of the weird stuff. But the 49ers were, yeah, it was weird. Remember the weird turf stuff? I'm glad they got that figured out. They had all kinds of turf problems at first when they slapped that building together and had to resaw it all the time. Haven't heard a lot about that recently. But no, I mean, there's no curse. Come on. It's just on a personal level, I wish the 49ers could have got a stadium done in San Francisco. That would have been awesome. Just for selfish reasons, easier to get there. The San Francisco 49ers play in San Francisco, right? But I don't even live in San Francisco anymore. Just moved recently, if you didn't hear. And so I didn't move to Santa Clara either, so I'm still not close to the stadium. No, there's no curse. And they've had some bad luck and some bad go. But, like, what about a team like the Browns that had a rough go for 20-something years? Or any number of teams that have just been bad forever and don't have five Lombardis hanging in their trophy case? Yeah, the 49ers don't have it so bad. And no, I don't think there's a curse. Is everything perfect about a stadium in Santa Clara and Levi's Stadium? Maybe not, but no, not definitely not a curse. This is a tough one from Alex. Better set of talent, 49ers offense or 49ers defense? Right now, I would say that the 49ers defense has more talent, especially with the additions of another top five draft pick and trade/free agent acquisition of D Ford. The 49ers threw tons of money at Quan Alexander at linebacker. They have a really good young middle linebacker in Fred Warner, big money guy, perennial all pro in Richard Sherman at cornerback. High draft picks everywhere on the defensive line. I think overall just way more resources have been put into the defensive side of the ball. And so the defense really needs to play that way, play like a unit that has ridiculous amount of resources put in there. I think offensively, a lot of it depends on Jimmy Garoppolo. So as Garoppolo goes, the rest of the offense will follow. They've added talent at wide receiver, which is huge and key. Some continuity on the offensive line, maybe not a lot of depth there. It could be a great unit, and coaching is going to have a big impact on both of those units, which might make the offense play better this year. But I think talent-wise and what's been put on the field and in the resources, I still think the defensive side of the ball, and I think that's the right way to build a team. Get your quarterback in, get a good coach to coach that offense, build depth on offense, be pretty good everywhere, and then throw resource after resource on the defensive side of the ball, because I think it was Bill Walsh that said the offense gets to dictate where the ball goes and dictate tempo and dictate everything. So you can do what you want offensively and go where you want on defense. They get to pick where they attack you. So you got to be good everywhere. This podcast is brought to you in part by Hotels.com and Grip 6 Belts. To Troy on Twitter, do you think an 18-game season after only two preseason games, the league will go to two bye weeks? Also, how do you think fantasy football would be affected if they go to a longer season? That's interesting. If the NFL went to 18 regular season games and two preseason games, I think everyone would be happy about that, more real football. I think the biggest impact of that, and we're already seeing it, so there's less practice days, less contact in the offseason, so shrinking amount of time to practice and learn, expanding playbooks, so things are getting more difficult, more, you know, wordy. We heard a couple weeks ago about the super long play call from Kyle Shanahan. So you have less time to learn more information and less time to practice it. And I think that's already why coaching is so important in the NFL. I think it has a bigger impact than any major sport out there. And I think the coaching would be even more important, and how self-driven the players are, not so much from a workout perspective, but a study perspective, being ready to go, having themselves ready to play week one, which would have essentially been week three of the preseason. That would be interesting, and that would be fun to see how teams look, and would they need to sort of slowly roll into the season. Might see a lot of sloppy football early in an 18-week season. And how many injuries would there be then? There's already guys beat up. 18 games, you would have to have nearly two full rosters to for the 49ers, at least how things have gone recently, you'd have to have two full rosters worth of people to finish a full season. How would it affect fantasy football? I don't think it would really affect fantasy football that much. Just more weeks, more points. The attrition. The attrition factor of just another couple of games that people could be injured. And maybe fewer players hogging all of the touches and the carries for running backs, for example. Probably impact running backs more than anything. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm for it. More games. More real games. You know, people who have season tickets don't want four preseason games every year. People start throwing asterisks on the record books. 6,000 passing yards. Yeah, that'd be wild. I guess we can tackle the running back question again. Elvin asks, who do you expect to be the bell cow of the 49ers loaded running back group? And I talked about this last week with Nick. And there's only one guy healthy right now of that deep group, and that's Tevin Coleman. So right now, at least, he's got the lead because he's the only back healthy and out there working with the first team. So Matt Breida, I think if both of those players were healthy for 16 games, I think Matt Breida would steal more and would get more touches and more carries. And I think Jerick McKinnon coming off the ACL, don't really know what we're going to have there. I think you're going to see more of a third down role for him. So as far as the bell cow situation, it would be a pretty even split right now. Keep everybody healthy, even split between Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida on first and second down, and then probably a lot of Jerick McKinnon on third down is the way I guess it would go. So basically my answer is it's a straight-up committee, and whoever's healthiest is probably going to be the guy who ends up with the most touches throughout the season. Steven has a question that I asked a few weeks ago, and I'm wondering this same thing, and I'm still trying to figure out if this is still Robert Saleh's defense. Steven says, seems like Kocurek's wide nine, subsequent stacked linebackers, and Woods' interchangeable safeties are a departure from the basic cover three he preached upon his hire. And even earlier this offseason, before the draft, they were asked again, and the 49ers, or maybe it was right after the draft, it's like, yeah, we're running cover three. That's our defense. That's our scheme. That's what we're going to do. And then Woods is sitting here saying, no, we're going to run a lot of split safeties. And from the beat writers' reports that were at practice, they were doing a lot of that, interchanging the deep safety and the strong safety. And Kocurek's got a different scheme up front. So if the defensive line's doing something different and the defensive backs are doing something different, and now the linebackers, we're learning the old strong side linebacker that's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker type. They're just going to three straight off-ball linebackers now. And so that's even changed. So all three levels of the defense have changed from what they brought Saleh in to do. So two questions, are they running that scheme? And the second question is Robert Saleh's on shaky ground? Is his job maybe, is he interviewing for his own job this year basically? because it sounds like it's not the same scheme. Or maybe it's just going to be very, just more multiple than it used to be. Maybe they'll do a lot of the same stuff, but also change things up as well and just show some other looks. We'll see how much wide nine actually affects how different the scheme is and how often they're going to be interchanging those safeties and how often they're going to be a split safety look rather than the cover three. Yeah, there's definitely some, I don't know if it's a power struggle, but something's going on there. It's not just Robert Saleh's show anymore. Let's finish this off with Curtis. What has to go right, in your opinion, for the Niners to make the playoffs? A, luck. And talking like, you know, just the ball bouncing their way a few times. It seemed to bounce away from them every time last year with their league low turnover rate. And injury, luck. So those things have to flip in the 49ers' favor, or at least, you know, get closer to the mean. And then quarterback, it hinges on the quarterback. The Shanahan Garoppolo situation has to be on point. It has to be clicking, and he's got to stay healthy. And that's going to be the number one, like by far, factor if the 49ers make the playoffs. And the next thing after that, I think, is depth. Offensive line, can they stay healthy? Can they keep Garoppolo upright? And then the defensive backfield, does the pass rush help them out? Do all those guys develop, stay consistent, stay healthy, stay on the field, and the back end solidified? Then it's like, okay, now you're talking. And if all those things happen, then that's a playoff football team for sure. Then the question is, how many of those things can falter and they still limp into the playoffs maybe, or still are so good everywhere else that they can overcome that? That's a big question. And maybe a question we will get into later this week, because that is the end of today's show. Thank you so much, everybody, getting involved in this mailbag. My apologies if I did not get to your question, but we will be getting back into the mailbag as we do with Nick Winkler on Winky Wednesday. Talk to you guys tomorrow when my guest will be Jeff Deeney of Pro Football Focus. Talk to you then right here on Locked On 49ers.